I had the opportunity at a number of World Youth Days to see him and to see the way he related to young people, to see the way this tired old frame was able to be transformed into a smiling face conducting the crowds. He was like a grandfather, and the young people really, really loved him. And I think that was his first legacy, a great legacy, was the World Youth Days and his pastoral care of the young people of the church. The second aspect is at the other end of the spectrum. It's about old age. And for me, it was extraordinarily impressive to see how John Paul II coped with old age, but more importantly, with infirmity. He didn't hide it. He didn't say, I should retire, or I should sneak away so that people won't notice how sick I am. He openly came out there, and he reminded me of Jesus in the Gospel, where he tells John, when you were young, you went where you want, but when you are old, someone would put a belt around you and take you to a place you would rather not go. And John Paul lived that. You saw him struggling in so many different occasions to walk, to talk. Again, I saw him with the young people when his words were indecipherable. You didn't know what he was saying. And yet the pure effort, the fact that he went and he moved among people. And he said, it's okay to be old. It's okay to be infirm. It's okay to have Parkinson's. And I think that inspired an extraordinary amount of people with illness. So the young and the old were, in my view, the greatest legacies of a truly great Pope.
That's an interesting comment, because many people would say he brought down communism, really. He was very instrumental in that. He helped very much in Jewish-Christian relations, and that wouldn't be disputed. But you feel that in terms of what will endure, those are the areas in which, in some ways, when he was weakest, he was strongest in that gospel sense.
Well, he was a multifaceted personality, and he certainly was one of the most extraordinary figures of the 20th century, indeed of any century. And undoubtedly people are saying he should be called John Paul the Great, because he was a great pope. He was a very unusual pope, and he had so many different gifts. And some of the ones you mentioned, of course, pertaining to his political acumen and his leadership and his courage. And I was only reading again the other day the story of how he saved the young Jewish woman as a young priest by carrying her on his shoulder. So his love of the Jewish people, his desire to bring the all Christians together, particularly the Orthodox Church, and of course the fall of communism, are extraordinary testaments to his leadership. But there is something about his witness, something about you could do all those things and yet not be an attractive or likable person. But I think why the world loved John Paul II was because he was a man whose heart was full of love, and he evoked that in two of the most vulnerable groups, you could say, the young and the old.
So we come then to Pope Benedict. Cardinal Ratzinger, maybe not necessarily a figure that would have inspired to begin with the same kind of love and affection. I mean, maybe people more of an agenda with him. He was head of the Doctrine for the Propagation of the Faith and had some harsh decisions to make in that regard. How do you think now, and it is his birthday, have you been surprised by his pontificate?
I think most people have been surprised by Pope Benedict, because everybody had an opinion about Cardinal Ratzinger, and many of the opinions were negative. I think that the first stage in what you could say the public rehabilitation of Cardinal Ratzinger was at John Paul's funeral, where he preached the most magnificent homily. And people began to see a different side to him then. I remember when I was a student in Rome, I lived in the Teutonic College, and he was even then, 25 years ago, a very powerful cardinal in the Roman Curia. And yet when he came in to breakfast, he always put everybody else ahead of him. There was something very gentle and very calm, very serene about him.
A lot of people or theologians who were hauled up before him mightn't say that or share that view.
Well, perhaps they wouldn't, but I think probably he was doing a particular job, and there was another side to him that people perhaps didn't see. And I think there were two early hints to the other side. The first was in that homily he gave at the Pope's funeral, where, particularly where he pointed to the window and talked about going to the house of the Father. and saying, "Bless us, Holy Father." That really evoked, applause in the crowd, and people were saying, "This is Cardinal Ratzinger." And then I think the second was the choice of name, because Benedict was presumably chosen because of his love for Saint Benedict and the monastic tradition, which saved European culture from annihilation. And I think that the Pope would have this sense that we are a culture in need of salvation. So a different kind of person has emerged from the theological Rockefeller that people were expecting. And I think he did surprise people that his first encyclical was about the love of God. And it was a very profound meditation and reflection on the fact that God loves us and we are called to respond. And again, it's not what people associated with Cardinal Ratzinger, but clearly he's a man of a very profound spirituality. He doesn't have the same charisma as his predecessor, but maybe it's become a truism now, but some people are saying that people went to Rome to see John Paul II and they go to Rome to hear Benedict XVI, because I think he's fundamentally a teacher, and he goes back very much to his days as a professor in university, and even as Pope he likes to sit behind the table and give a talk and then take questions, and he never seems to be fazed even by the most difficult and demanding questions.
And in terms of the Muslim community, I mean, John Paul, as you pointed out, made great strides with the Jewish community. He did make what some saw as a faux pas, other people saw it as unfair, and yet when he went to Turkey, a very brave to go there, I thought, also seemed to be able to heal that rift with the Muslim community in terms of if there was any perceived insult.
Yes, he did. And this seems to be one of his gifts that, again, it probably didn't emerge in the Cardinal Ratzinger of old. But he's obviously a very, very Germanic. He's a very direct talker. And for him, dialogue means saying what you feel. And what he says is what he feels. He has no difficulty with that. And he has no difficulty with somebody expressing a contrary view. And he seems to have got over that, and the visit to Turkey, by all accounts, was a spectacular success. Another example of that dialogue was the fact that one of the earliest things that he did in his papacy was he invited Hans Küng, who would be regarded as very far from him in theological terms, to an afternoon in Castel Gandolfo, where they had a long debate and a very friendly encounter. And again, it seemed to set a tone, Benedict saying, "I'm not afraid of dissent now, I'm not afraid of people expressing a different view, but you have to be able to defend your different view, because I will defend mine." So this, he has a very robust understanding of dialogue, it seems.
Finally, in the years to come, he is 80, it's a fine age, and what do you think is the biggest challenge facing him in the world today?
I would say that for Pope Benedict, the challenge that he sees is the challenge of Europe. Africa has its own situation, Latin America, Asia, all these are important problems, the interreligious dialogue. But I think that he is very much, as a German, preoccupied with the decline of faith in Europe. And I think it's something that he is trying to grapple with and address. And I would think that that is the area that he would give considerable reflection to and energy towards.